Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for April 22nd. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me freezing in Tokyo is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Speak for yourself. I'm nice and cozy here in Tokyo. It's freezing outside, mind you. I'm fine, thanks. How are you doing, man?
I'm freezing.
Enough said. That's cold, bro.
I can't feel body parts. It's awful. We've gone back to winter for some reason. I don't know why. I got to get over it, though. I'm going to be running tomorrow, I think. So
remember, Japan has four seasons, and sometimes you get them all in one week.
Well, on this week's show, we're going to get interview. It's a Japan Baseball Weekly first, a dual interview, a twin billing, if you will, a twin killing, if you might. Jim and I both went out to Seibu Dome to speak to Ryan Spielvors of the Seibu Lions. And then we're going to discuss early success by the Seibu Lions and answer some awesome listener questions. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases.
All right. Remember, if you live in the United States, find out more information on watching live Giants games on oneworldsports.com. All right, let me open by making this one quick statement about the Boston Marathon. I've never run in a marathon without some kind of support system with me or support group at the finish line. And, you know, every runner or competitor finishes on their own 2 feet or on their own power, but you never do it alone. And you need those people who help you stretch, help you eat right, help you train, lose weight, sleep, give you fashion tips on your poor choices for running gear when you go out to run.
Were you getting that help, John?
You get all kinds of help. Anyway, nobody runs alone. So while I have no hesitation about running in a marathon in the United States, if I could qualify for Boston, I'd run it next year. I don't know I think the world has changed now with the way we're going to view the ends of races like that or any kind of event. So it's unfortunate, but they're not going to stop us. We're going to keep going.
Keep on running, man.
And our hearts go out to all the people who are affected. So we hope everybody gets through it. I mean, it's just tough. It's just tough to think about. But thank goodness it's over. Thank goodness they caught the guys. And let's get back to Japanese baseball. So a first in Japan Baseball Weekly podcast history. Jim and I both happen to be going out to Seibu Dome on Wednesday.
We've been doing that a lot recently. It's been kind of fun. We're out there. It's more like Tony Blanco was so happy that we were enjoying ourselves last week or 2 weeks ago.
T60. I'm really going to call him 260, man. Yeah, I'm going to get some t-shirts.
I got him
that
today. I tell you, he's on that T60. He better do it by the 1st of September, though. It gets awfully hard after that. Okay. So anyway, we were at Seibu Dome and going to see the Lions. Well, I was going to see the Lions and Oryx Buffaloes play.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a chance to talk to new Lion, Ryan Spielvors, who I'd heard about from Lions scout Kevin Hodges in February.
When we had him on the show, yeah. When you did your little 1 hour podcast with him.
We were catching up, man. We got a history, man.
I'm gonna have to get you some editing software so you can catch up with the editing skills.
thank you. Anyway, Kevin and I talked about Ryan Spielvors. Kevin talked about Ryan Spielvors, who I was unfamiliar with, but as soon as I mentioned him, when somebody asked me in the WBC, who are the new guys coming to Japan? And I said, Spielvors, and a bunch of guys went, wow, what a great guy. So I was really eager to talk to Ryan. And I think we got you listeners will hear it. You'll understand why why we got that positive feedback. He's a very interesting listen. And we asked, you know, he had one thing that got to me about Ryan is how this guy went from looking like a semi-regular with the Colorado Rockies until he, you know, for the few years in his peak when he's in his prime. As soon as he got to 30, sort of like the wheels came off the cart. He's in the minor leagues and then he's in Japan.
The wheels didn't really come off the cart, I don't think. I think he was in the cart too long, you know. As a salesman, you can only move them to the back row or to the front row or to the side a little while until you decide, hey, look, get off my cart.
Well, here's the thing is that 2011, he was in the minors and he had a superb season, but all of a sudden he's in Japan. You know, he's goes from major league regular or, you know, regular contributor.
Semi, yeah.
And he was pretty good. He was pretty good. Not a star, but pretty good in Colorado. And then he's in the minors and he's very good. And then he's in Japan. Normally that that's an unusual progression.
Yeah.
Because somebody will want to give you a job. But anyway, so that was a big thing that I was curious about. And Ryan filled us in on a few things about how things are going with him. So let's have a listen.
All right. Our guest on the show this week is Ryan Spielborz. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, I appreciate it. It's good to see some familiar kind of faces in another country. So I appreciate meeting you.
Great. Familiar kind of faces. You look similar. We look similar.
Yeah, that's what Terry always says. You look like somebody.
Yeah, you look like somebody I might know. So it's nice to meet you guys.
All right. So you joined the Lions this year. Jim wants to ask you about that. You're about your route and everything.
Well, you came up with the Rockies, and you were kind of a semi-regular with the Rockies for a few years. And then what was it like the day you turned 30? They decided you belonged on the bench or something?
No, I don't know what it was. Obviously, when you got guys like Carlos Gonzalez and Dexter Fowler, you know, you have some young superstars. I was never an everyday player. You know, I got my opportunities when guys got hurt and always took advantage of them. 2011 was my last year of my contract that I had with the Rockies, and I, you know, through a set of, you know, strange and unfortunate injuries between Dexter and Carlos Gonzalez, I kind of got forced to play more often while I was nursing a really bad heel. I had plantar fasciitis, and my ego's, you know, especially with the player that, you know, with the opportunities that I've gotten throughout my career, I don't turn down opportunities very easily, and is one that, much to the detriment of my career, has really cost me. You know, having to play hurt for 2 months, you know, pretty much crippled a season that could have been good if I would have gone on the DL had I just listened to my body and, you know, just put my ego aside. And, you know, other than that, you know, I think I've always done my job wherever I was, whether it was big leagues or AAA or whatever. So it wasn't like I've ever done anything out of the ordinary, and I've never really played over my capabilities or under them. So, you know, throughout my whole career, I've pretty much been the same guy. And just now I'm here in Cebu, the same guy, nothing's really changed, and just trying to go day to day and do my best.
How's your foot?
But yeah, it's a non-factor now. You know, it's been almost 2 years since I had that. It's my right heel. And that was my load leg. So, you know, you mentioned you like my swing. Well, my swing didn't look anything like that 2 years ago because I couldn't physically put the weight on my backside to hit. And if you're trying to hit major league pitching, let alone Japanese pitching or anything, and you're trying to hit off your front foot, I don't care who you are, it's not very easy.
Tough to hit dude next door, I think.
Yeah, so now that I'm healthy, you know, you can see my swing plays as far as how I'm able to load up and sit back. And, you know, now that physically I'm capable of doing it, I did it last year in AAA, just being healthy. And that's how I got my opportunity to be here in Japan, was just proving I was healthy. And whatever player I am is what I am, and that's what they appreciate here. So.
Now, you played a lot of the outfield. Obviously, it's because you had to play wherever they needed somebody. And you obviously said that you don't turn down the opportunities. What position is your best?
I would say, you know, throughout my whole career, I've been a center fielder. But like I said, I think all outfield positions are similar. You just throw me out there and I'll be fine. Center fielder is the easiest if you're an athlete, let alone you don't even have to be an athlete. You see the ball the best off the bat, and the ball flies true to you. You don't have to worry about slices. On the corners, you have to worry about the ball going towards the foul line. Other than that, I mean, an outfielder and an outfielder, you know, they put people out there for a reason. They put the worst players and some of the best ones out there. So, I mean, it's outfield, and I just try to do my best.
Are they asking you to learn a little first base while you're here?
Yeah, I've actually played more first base here than I have in my whole career. I played several games in AAA with the Rockies, and there's a point, you know, where they were asking me to be Helton's backup. So that was never going to happen. It was like being the backup for, you know, Luke Gehrig. So I was capable of doing it, and here they've asked me to do it a lot more than I'm accustomed to, which is kind of a fun thing for me. But, you know, it's always wanting to be an infielder. You want to be it for the meetings at the pitcher's mound. And here it's not the same because I can't understand a word anyone's saying. So, you know, for all the years that I've been standing in the outfield just wondering what's been going on in those meetings at the mound, you know, I don't get to experience it the way I kind of envisioned it. So,
do you always think you had something to say to the pitcher? Is that why you wanted to be in those meetings on the mound?
I don't know. I always pictured it like the Bull Durham, you know, maybe a candlestick or, you know, whatever kind of present, you know, they need for their wedding. I don't know. I didn't know what to expect from the meetings there, and I doubt my words of wisdom would ever come into play, so they'd probably just tell me to be quiet and go to my position.
Yeah, well, they probably anticipated that. They asked you to move to first base. Maybe we can keep this guy quiet. Anyway, when you were first broached with the idea of coming to Japan, what was your first response?
First thought was...
Noodles?
Not noodles.
That's John's first thought.
My first thought was, you know, going into, after being in AAA last year, where I felt I could have been of use to somebody in the big leagues last year, and being kind of forced to be in AAA for an entire year waiting for injury and opportunity, and never happened. You know, I was kind of curious if there was an opportunity for me in Japan, and judging by some of my friends that have come on over here and done well, guys like Matt Merton, I thought maybe it's an avenue I'd consider, depending on what kind of opportunities presented to themselves for me in the offseason.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was during the WBC, when I was reporting and talking to guys, meeting teams from Tigers and Oryx guys and so on, I mentioned, so who's with the Lions this year? I had just talked to Kevin Hodges, mm-hmm. and he said, Spilborg's here, and people went, wow, great. So I got this really positive feedback.
Well, I appreciate that. Obviously, they didn't know me very well yet.
They're all pitchers.
Yeah, they're all pitchers. Oh, perfect. Yeah, great. I'm glad he's here.
Speaking of which, now, you had a decent spring, I think, and there's a lot of imports, a lot of first-year guys here, and you haven't really gotten that much playing time. I guess the question is, what's up with that?
Well, you know, as you know, Japanese baseball, you get Lions have five foreigners, and only four are allowed to be on the active roster, and I got every opportunity at the beginning of that camp to do well, and I, for the most part, did well in the beginning, and then in the middle, I kind of lost my way, and definitely had to make an adjustment with how I was getting pitched. You know, they have me hitting cleanup, which is, you know, for a first-year guy coming here trying to understand the pitching and the mechanics of how their pitchers work and how you're going to get pitched to, you know, it's quite a challenge to start off. And I didn't do as well during the middle 2 weeks as I did in the first part or the end. And, you know, Jose Ortiz had a very, very strong camp. And, you know, the Lions felt that was probably going to be their best bet, was to go with a veteran guy that was hitting well. And I had no problem with that. I took that as an opportunity to go down to the minor leagues here and get at bats and keep working on, you know, my timing with Japanese pitchers and just feeling comfortable at the plate. And I think I did that. I think I went back down, and I felt like the last 2 weeks of camp here, I was hitting the ball well and wasn't striking out. And as soon as I went down the minor leagues, it carried over. And I think it's still carried over to these being back in this team now. Just I don't have the amount of hits that I was accustomed to getting. But I've also hit a lot of balls really hard. So to me, it's not a matter of the results so far. It's just I'm hitting the ball hard and giving good at-bats. And I know over the course of however many at-bats I end up getting, I'll hit. So I'm not worried about where my average is or anything is right now.
Your family was at the game last night, and you got a home run. How'd that feel?
It was great. I got my wife and two little kids and a four-year-old daughter and a two-year-old son. And, you know, to be able to look up and see them in the stands is, you know, it's a treat. And, you know, after the game, they had fans coming down on the field, and, you know, my daughter and son were sprinting all over the outfield. So it's pretty fun as a parent to come down, you know, after your work, and you get to play with your kids at your field, which is, you know, my kids weren't quite big enough at the big league level for me to enjoy that. So even though it is Japanese baseball, it's still nice to be able to share your profession with your kids. And I do take that very personal, and I don't, you know, I really enjoy that fact that I get that.
All right, one last question, we'll let you go. Jose Ortiz, you mentioned, and he's been a professional hitter here for so long. What has he really taught you? What has he really helped you with in terms of adjusting?
His biggest thing is he always says, don't get frustrated. And that works on so many levels with so many things here as a foreign guy coming in, you know, is with the culture and with baseball and with some of the things that, you know, Japanese baseball does as far as you know, just the politics of their style of game, you know, don't get frustrated is a very, very, very good thing to think about. You know, you might go for 20 or you might be hitting balls hard like I had, and not get frustrated with the game and know that opportunities will still present themselves. You know, when they sent me down, they told me it's a really long season, and I know that more than anybody, having played in the big leagues 162 games for a couple of years, that wherever you are at the beginning of the season is nowhere near where you're going to be at the end. So, you know, if you take that into heart and understand that it's still April, even if it was June, you still got plenty of time to do whatever you need to do to have a good, successful season and help out a team.
All right, well, good luck. You guys have started out well. It looks like you're doing well.
Looks like you got a lot left in the tank for the long season.
Appreciate it, yeah.
All right, so thanks for joining us.
Thanks, you guys. Appreciate it.
All right, well, thank you, Ryan. It was a great pleasure to meet you, and we're looking forward to seeing how your season progresses.
Yep, thanks a lot, Ryan, and maybe be some more familiar faces if we can bump into you on the train sometime going into the park.
Okay, well, anyway, what stood out for you in that?
You know what, as we were sitting there, and he, obviously I'm holding a tape recorder and doing the tape recorder triangle where, you know, if you say something, I point it in your direction, and then when Ryan's speaking, I'm pointing it in his direction, and then back to myself. But when he said that his advice from Jose Ortiz, whom we already talked to Kevin Hodges, and we know that he said that Ortiz is the kind of guy who would not hold back information, and I made a big deal about that. That the only information he got, now maybe Ryan is maybe holding back from us. He doesn't want to give away. He doesn't want to give out the company secrets or whatever it is. But when he said that his advice was don't get frustrated, I'm like, that's it? You know, that I was seriously sitting there thinking, well, no. He probably gave you information on these pitchers and what these guys like to do, but this is all you're going to divulge to us, maybe. But, you know, I just remember when I was playing basketball and people say, you know, we had a big game and people would say, okay, don't get nervous. It's just like in practice. When somebody tells you not to do something, that's the first thing that you start doing. You know, if they tell me not to be nervous, I wouldn't have been nervous up until that point. But as soon as they mentioned it and planted it in my brain, of course, then I got nervous. So don't get frustrated. That's the only, you know, maybe, I don't know. Maybe we're infringing on the trade secrets here, but I got to believe there was more exchange than that. I'm hoping there was at least.
Yeah, I thought about that as well, but I also think that having talked to different guys and about their approaches here when they come to Japan, that they're going to be taking things in. If they don't want it, they're going to be spitting it out, you know, as they go along. And I think probably the most important thing was that reminder. You know, the rest of it is baseball. These guys are playing baseball. It's not something that's new to them. But what I was thinking is that something Lasting's Millage said the other day is how hard it can be to deal with the cultural disconnects in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
That this is something you anticipate to some degree, but until you've actually done it, it's hard to grasp. Now, baseball is hard enough where you're familiar with the context and you're familiar with the situation. I mean, everybody struggles when they go up a level in baseball. There's always a new challenge. Going to the major leagues, there's all these rules, as Lasting's Millage and Niger Morgan can tell you about their experiences trying to fit in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always an easy road. Well, in Japan, where there are all these, you're in a different culture, you're in a different, the expectations and the way verbal communication is managed is very different. The way, you know, unwritten rules is sometimes they're completely different.
Even if they're written, in Japanese.
Ah, well said. Yes, indeed. So there's the language barrier, there's the cultural barrier, there's the history barrier, and that everybody assumes your baseball is their baseball, which you know the same things and you do and you don't. It's kind of a hit and miss. So there's so many more things that can derail your concentration if you let it. So I think, you know, don't get frustrated is fairly good advice. And I think on a fundamental level, take care of the baseball, but don't get frustrated. Oh, to me, that's not so bad. Now, what I was thinking, you know, when I heard that, when I heard him talk, was the first thing was, you know, I've always wondered what outfielders thought about mound meetings. Now we know.
Yeah, that was a good one, too. I really like that. Yeah. What would you say if you ran in from the outfield and had an opportunity to talk to a pitcher anyway? I don't know.
Right. Well, just imagine it's one of these situations where there's five. They're bringing an outfielder in as a fifth infielder, and suddenly the guy misses two pitches. This is badly, and they have a mound meeting. This guy's going to feel like he walked in from Mars. Do I get to go?
The other thing that really stood out a little bit for me was, you know that I have that fond spot for the guys like Spilly. He likes to call himself Spilly, who they're just scrappy guys. And the way he said, you know, look, he should have listened to his body. He should have sat out.
Yeah.
But he wasn't going to turn down the opportunity to play. And it probably cost him in the long run. If he did let his body heal, maybe he would have had a better major league career. But the Lions lost Hiroshi Hirao, I think.
Uh-huh.
And he was one of my favorite guys because he's scrappy like this. And I think they replaced it a little bit with this kind of player who, you know, everything can be going in the wrong direction for him, but he'll still find a way to be productive for you. And that part came out, you know, in the interview where I got that sense that he's going to be really valuable going down the, whether he's playing full time, whether they bring him up from the farm late in the season because somebody else is injured or whatever the circumstances are, he won't let that bother him. He's going to find a way to be productive for him.
Well, there's a thing I'm going to go back to, one of my favorite lines from Kimiyasu Kudo, which is, and something that you'll understand is that conditioning is really a dangerous word, because sometimes you hold back, you know, in order to preserve your body for the next, you know, the next opportunity. You hold yourself back from exerting yourself completely. You hold yourself back from overdoing it. But as an athlete, you have to overdo it to some degree. You have to push yourself right to the point where you're not going to injure yourself if you're going to be at your maximum. Now, if you're a guy who's had to cut and scrape for a major league career, I mean, everybody has to cut and scrape to become a major leaguer,
mm-hmm.
to various degrees. I don't care if you're Barry Bonds. If you don't pay the cost, you're not going to be playing in the majors.
Right.
But for that mentality, that's the mentality, as he said, that's the mentality that gave him a major league career. And that's the mentality that's going to help him out with the Lions. That it hurt him is not a big surprise. But, I think it is a positive. I mean, that and the attitude. Oh, I got sent down to the minors. An opportunity.
Right.
So,
yeah, I can play more.
Exactly. I can get more swings. I can work on these adjustments. Obviously, I'm not exactly where I need to be. You know, these are really wonderful habits. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. Now, hopefully, he'll get a chance, because the flip side is, you know, he said he had the normal approach, the Western approach, the American approach, which is, as long as I'm hitting the ball hard and having quality at bats, getting good swings on my pitches, I'm okay. In Japan, you line out too many times and you're in the minors.
Yeah, I will say it again. John Bowker last year was hitting line drives all over the place the first month, and he got sent down to the minors. And
that's right.
This year, granted, the ball seems to be flying a little bit differently, but he's hitting the ball, and now he's a star, and he's getting starts every day. So it is how the ball bounces. It is how the cookie crumbles that matters.
It is indeed. So, you know, there's that extra dimension, which everybody knows. And this, yes, but again, there's not a lot you can do about it. So as much as possible, not let that bother you. And the Lions, as much as I like Watanabe, the Lions are not any more free of that kind of thinking than other clubs. He's a little better, you know. He and Hara are better about, especially with young players who do not meet the immediate expectations of encouraging them and reminding them they're going to get another chance, then giving them another chance.
Yomiuri skipper Tatsunori Hara, right?
Arihara, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So in that respect, good. But with foreign players, you know, that leash is a little tighter.
Yeah. So. But I like Spilly's. I like his swing for Japan. I like his plate coverage. I think he can. He's able to adjust to those off-speed pitches. And he did say that he lost his way for a little bit. And unfortunately, we don't get to see a lot of the preseason games, so it's hard to see where he lost his way. But I liked what I saw when I did see him play a couple games at Tokyo Dome. So. I think he'll be all right. I think it's an adjustment period like it is for every guy. And, you know, this team is looking a lot better than it was last year at this time when it was losing every day, it seemed. And the thing that I noticed when we went out to the park, obviously this was my first trip out there, and got to see Esteban Germán right away, and the big smile, the smile on his face was so genuine. Now, last year he was, you know, he'd smile and say hello, but the undertone and the underlying story was of death and the Grim Reaper tapping them on the shoulder after every game, it seems. Don't you know you guys are dead? That was the first half, because this team finished second. We keep forgetting that this team rallied and finished second last year.
He was in a very peculiar situation in that he was brought in. He was not had not been a leadoff hitter before, but he was quickly the leadoff hitter, and he started the season, as I recall, in second base. And then no sooner had he gotten used to being the second baseman and the leadoff hitter, but they had him playing in center field. And then no sooner had he figured out he was going to be the center fielder, but then he was at third base. So he got a whirlwind tour of Cebu Dome. And the other thing to remember is that while the Lions were bad last year, their pitching was pretty bad coming out of the chute. And Takeya Nakamura didn't hit worth beans, really, until interleague.
Yeah, you're saying they were bad. I was saying that they weren't winning. I don't know that they were bad, but you're right. The difference between this year and last year is, in my mind, it's the pitching, because some of the guys, like we expected them to hit. They were scoring some runs here and there, but they – for, you know, the three runs that they'd score, they'd give up six. So I think it's the pitching this time around. I think you look at Ken Togame, who pitched his first career complete game. He had a great spring last year, and then the season started, unfortunately, for him. And,
well, he looked, when I saw him in the second half, he looked pretty he looked sharp now and then. He's, you know, he was in a situation where you see this with guys who are learning their way, is they'll be up and down a lot because adjustments are tough to make, batter to batter. And he was making them and then losing his way and making more adjustments. And it was that kind of an up and down year. He's still in that process, but he's farther along that road. He's got more, he knows more than he did last year, obviously.
Yeah, I think he's able to make the in-game adjustments, even batter to batter or pitch to pitch adjustments, a lot better than he was making them last year.
No doubt.
You say Kikuchi, I'm still not sold on his secondary stuff, but he's doing enough to keep guys off. I mean, I think he's going to have a good game, bad game. He's going to be Jekyll Hyde kind of a guy. But he's definitely found a spot in the rotation. Yeah. He's going to be useful, and it looks like, you know, he notched his first shutout the other day.
Good game, bad game from Kikuchi is a step up from bad game and sometimes be useful.
Yeah. Hideaki Wakui. Now, he's off to a 3-0 start, but I don't think it's very convincing.
No. But better than what we saw last year. He was a zero in the rotation, and he had to come out of the bullpen where he was superb.
Yeah, I mean, they talked about last year his velocity being down a little bit, and then, you know, he just seems so mopey and so uninspired. You just don't know what's going on in that head.
Well, one has to. Okay, I'm not going to be derogatory. I'll just leave.
No, go ahead, please.
One can't waste a mind if there's no mind to waste. So, well, I mean, without Darvish. Thank you. Well, without Darvish around, you know, he's that whole sentence, well, me and Darvish, doesn't really hold much water anymore.
Yeah.
Every interview about him was, well, me and Darvish.
No, stop using your name in the same sentence.
Anyway, so no, he's sort of finding his way a bit. He's about back to where he was in the first 6 months after he won the Sawamura Award. We'll see what comes next. Kishi had a halfway decent game the other day, but he has been bad. Togame's been good. Kazuhisa Makita's been very sharp.
Yep.
So all in all, it's been pretty good. Randy Williams, you know, except for the big walks, has been pretty good.
Well, yeah, last year their bullpen was awful. This year it's adequate. And the other thing is Oishi, you know, Remember we talked to Brian Falkenborg before the SoftBank Hawks, and he said, hey, if I'm talking to the media, that's bad because I should be getting guys out and I should be seen and not heard. And
oh, that would be a waste for Brian Falkenborg because it's so good to be heard.
Yeah. But Oishi, you know, he settled into that role. He's going to be locking up games for him. So, you know, I don't know that how sharp he is. I actually haven't gotten to see him throw that much. So I'm not going to make any statements about that. But I know they're not saying anything bad. They blew so many games early on last year, and they're not blowing them this year. They might have blown a lead here and there, but they still win the games. And that's the most important thing, is to walk away with the W. And last year, they were giving up so many runs that late in games, it didn't even give an opportunity to come back. So, you know, there's a lot of good things going on, and Saber things, obviously, I didn't expect, but of course, I expected this last year. That's why I picked them to win the PL last year. So, yeah, I can't say it's bad.
Yeah, we expected more from some of the younger guys last year, or I expected more from some of the younger guys, but hey, sometimes it takes a little while. I still think they have a ton of young talent, and nothing has dissuaded me away from that into thinking anything more than they have more young talent than I thought they had last year.
Yeah. Now, Yuji Kaneko, I like him. I'm not sure. When we were sitting there on the sidelines, and I just saw how pencil thin his body is. That's the one thing that bothers me about him, is he's so small, so slight. I wouldn't call him a switch hitter. I'd call him more of a switch slapper. But
man, I hope this show doesn't go in England. Somebody's going to get the wrong impression.
Well, I don't know what that means in England, so.
Good.
And I don't care.
Good.
And,
as you would.
But I did hear the old baseball snobs praising his ability to make in-game adjustments to the way he's being pitched. And he handles fastballs well, especially when he knows there's a fastball coming and he's sitting on one. He actually puts a good swing on them. When
swings hard. I mean, he does swing hard.
Well, not all the time. The night before we went out there, so this was the Wednesday game, he had two hits on 60 feet of dribblers, worm killers, as we like to call them.
Yeah, two infield singles that the pitcher picked up.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, he's very thin. He's very narrow. He's certainly not hitting. He's not doing any damage to the ball. The ball doesn't mind being hit by him as much as it does being hit by Okawari-kun. But as long as fatigue and all that stuff, when the heat starts to play a role in baseball, as long as it doesn't knock him off, I think he's energetic enough. He's fast enough. He's going to beat out some of those little choppers, and he's going to contribute that way. Hopefully. Well, and Herman said, you know, if he's not working out defensively, they'll put somebody else in at the end of games to finish up for him.
And the other thing is, he can play everywhere on the infield. You know, he can play anywhere. He's an outfielder who's learning to play shortstop. So he had played shortstop before, but he's going back to that position. They've got so many defensive options with this team. They've got a ton of good outfielders. They got some pretty good infielders, although the infield is basically unsettled. I mean, that's the big word for it. You have to wonder, when Takeya Nakamura comes back, what are they going to do with Esteban Herman? Where are they going to put him? I mean, he can play second. He can play the outfield. He can do both of those quite well.
Yeah. So it's a good problem. It's a good problem for Watanabe to have, and I'm sure he'd rather have that one than the headaches of last year. So.
Well, he always has those, you know, guys getting hurt. We talked about this some degree on the website, on the Facebook page last year, and in emails. You know, Watanabe is better at damage control and plugging in untried guys into a pennant race and getting more mileage out of them than anybody in Japan. But the question is, why are the Lions, I mean, this year it's the Yakult Swallows, but why are the Yakult Swallows emulating the Lions? This is normal for the Lions. That's normal for the Lions. It's not normal for any other team that everybody gets hurt.
Yeah, stay away from Jingu, man. You might get injured.
Right. Dangerous park.
All right, a few notes from around the league now that happened this past week. Hitoki Iwase of the Chunichi Dragons collected his 350th save. But that came a night after he blew a chance to get his 350th save in one of the most entertaining games I've seen this year so far. The Dragons and Swallows went in extra innings. Hector Luna makes a great defensive play. He makes this diving stop and rises to third base. And his 17-game This is Hector Lunes, by the way. His 17-game hitting streak to start the season got snapped, I think, the night after that on Thursday. But he's got a bunch of hits, hitting over 400, playing well in the field for them. He looks like a really good pickup for them. I got to talk to him the other day in Yokohama, so I'll be writing a story about him this week.
Okay. Yeah, they had a play. I didn't see it, but I know that there were all kinds of things on that, in that game, just from watching the text reports on my iPhone. And I know the Swallows had a chance to win it, and the winning run was thrown out at the plate. I don't know, was that ninth or the tenth inning or something? I don't recall, but I was waiting on that game to finish so I could file my story and go home.
Right, yeah. I believe that was in the that was right after the Hector Luna play in the ninth.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. If I remember correctly. I'm looking as we speak, though. Go ahead.
Ah, that's right. So anyway, we had some great games this week, and one guy you wanted to mention, because we had all these big career hits. I mean, we've got how many hits does Tanishige need now? He's about nine away now.
Yeah, he had a couple today, I think. That was a game that I wasn't.
He's had a season. He's already had a career season. It's only April.
It's true.
So you wanted to mention Tadahito Iguchi, or did we?
Yeah. Yeah, he's another player who's approaching 2,000 hits, only it's combined.
Which doesn't matter if you're Japanese.
It doesn't matter if you're Japanese, but it's combined, so it wasn't in the record books.
Oh, okay.
The book that I got.
Right.
So, yeah, he's fewer than 90 hits away from getting to 2,000, and he hit his 250th home run the other day. So.
Oh, and speaking of 2,000 hits, mark April 27th on your calendar.
April 27th, you have been marked.
That's right, indeed. If you have a chance to be at Yokohama, for I believe the Tigers are playing that day, you'll get a chance to see Alex Ramirez receive his Meikyu Kai blazer as the first foreign player. How about that?
April 27th, that's next Saturday. I'm off.
Yeah, and I'm off too, but I'll be in Shiga Prefecture.
But I can go, is what I'm saying. I can actually go.
Because that's a, you know, they didn't have a big run up to it, but you know, and there was a lot of, you know, what is the Meikyu Kai going to do when Alex Ramirez hits 2,000? The day after he did it, their homepage had a congratulations Alex Ramirez big banner photo, and then they've quietly announced on the 27th they're going to give him his blazer. He's going to be the first foreign born member of the Meikyu Kai. So congratulations!
Congratulations to him.
And to the Meikyu Kai for doing the right thing.
Yeah, well, they can't keep him out. That's one of your favorite lines. They can't keep him out. There's just no way. So yeah, the game the other day with the Dragons and the Swallows, Luna made the play in the 10th inning, and then Yusuke Matsui throws out a runner at the plate, and then he actually hit a home run.
Right.
A three-run shot in the 11th inning, and the Dragons won that game 10-6. It was really good.
Well, the Dragons went and got swept by the Bay Stars, and I think Matsui's now out for 4 weeks with a what does he have? Oblique. He's not the one who had the oblique strain. That was Tony Barnett. Boy, I can tell you that hurts.
And that was in that game. That was in that same game because after he gave up the home run, there was a close play at second base.
Okay.
A force play, and the umpire called the runner safe, and Tony blew up and kept saying, "You missed the call. You missed the call." I don't think he was using those kinds of terms, but and a few pitches later, he gives up the home run to Matsui, and then he screams at the umpire again, and yeah, it's very unfortunate. Another injury for the Swallows to go with Yuhei. What's his name?
Yuhei Takai. What is happening to the Swallows? It's bizarre.
Yeah, another one. So, and then they actually hit, who was the other one? Hirai. Ugh. Those poor guys.
Yep, they're in bad shape. They're in last place, and they're running out of bodies to, you know, to field a roster. They're going to be signing developmental contract guys just to field a team.
Maybe our MP3 question guy from New York can sign up here. They're going to maybe Swallows are going to have special tryouts soon.
Could be.
Now today, on Sunday, Shinosuke Abe hit his 300th home run.
Yep.
And you said he's He's the third catcher, so I'm going to try to guess the other two. I think the first one is the easiest one in the history of Japanese baseball, and that's Katsuya Nomura.
Very good.
The second one, I'm going to guess Tanishige.
Oh, no.
No?
Not the worst guess in the world.
Wouldn't think so. But
no. The number two is not a Hall of Famer, although maybe eventually is a Koichi Tabuchi, famous home run hitting catcher of the Hanshin Tigers.
Yeah, I was going to go back in history if it wasn't Tanishige.
the first player who came to my mind was Furuta, but I think Furuta's career ended with about 271 home runs.
I was just thinking, longevity.
Okay. Well.
Oh, he's only got, Shige's only got 222.
Oh, that's quite a lot for a guy who never hit a lot of home runs.
His high was 24 in 2002.
Yep.
All right, so third catcher. So Abe's in that club and building on a Hall of Fame career himself.
Yeah, we had a interesting play. Speaking of, we were talking about the Bay Stars and the Dragons, and we had Mr. Nakahata had some excitement over the weekend.
Well, I'm so glad that he got ejected the other day. Now, the good thing I'm so glad that he got ejected because I begged and pleaded for some passion in this sport, and we finally saw some, and not just from Barnett screaming at an umpire who may or may not have made a bad call. He wasn't the only one. Hoshino got ejected the other night as well.
Yeah, but
I don't know if you saw that, but he didn't bump the umpire. Now, the thing about the Nakahata ejection, this was over in Hiroshima the other night, and he flies out of the dugout and he runs straight at the umpire, and it's Kazuyuki Shirai. Now, you might not remember this, but this is the guy who threw Millage out last year.
Okay.
When Millage complained about a strike call and turned his head and said something in English, and it wasn't even that bad from what we heard, and he booted him from the game right away.
Okay.
So this is the same umpire. So, I mean, he wasted no time ejecting Nakahata.
Nakahata bumped him, first of all.
That was a nice little body blow. I really like that.
Yeah, okay. Now, the guy makes a lousy call.
I don't know that it was lousy.
It was
close.
Okay, well, let's put it this way. I want to say it looked bad, but if it's a close call, you got to give the umpire a little benefit of the doubt because he doesn't have instant replay.
Right.
But I don't think his position on the play was very good. But anyway, he's got to come out and argue with the umpire and not bump into him. I mean, he's got to learn that.
Yeah. Didn't he get thrown out a similar situation last year? I think he got ejected. Yeah. So yeah, he's got to, if you really want to argue with the umpire, you can't come up and chest him out of the batter's box.
Yeah. See, that they used to do that when he was playing. You could come out and bump the ump and, you know, put the kung fu grip on his shoulder and, you know, and then go back to the game. You could waste 20 minutes doing that. But times have changed and Nakahata hasn't yet. Anyway, so we saw that and it was a play at the plate, and then there was a big play on Saturday, which basically this was the Bay Stars had just tied the game on Alex Ramirez's bases loaded single.
Right.
There is one out. There's now two outs. Tatsuhiko Kinjo is at first base running for the Bay Stars with the bases loaded. It's the bottom of the eighth inning, and it's a tie game. Okay. Now, what happens is Keijiro Matsumoto hits a ball between first and second.
Wasn't there just one out?
There was one out.
That's right.
One out because it was right after Ramirez, Nakamura struck out for the first out. The bases had been, there had been no outs.
Okay,
so there's one out. Keijiro Matsumoto hits a ball, a little hard hopper between first and second. Now, the ball deflects off the glove of Matt Clark, the Dragons' first baseman, and Kinjo is sort of like caught in a menage a trois there with...
Wow. Really? Okay.
Matt Clark and Masahiro Araki converging on him as he tries to find a way in the baseline. Now,
Let's just call it the Bermuda Triangle instead of the baseball triangle. How's that? Let's get it out of bed here.
Here's what happens. Kinjo is running behind Clark.
Mm-hmm.
The ball hits Clark's glove. He fails to make a play. The ball deflects off Clark's glove and hits Kinjo as Araki is converging on the ball. Now, the ball hit him, which is true, and had it not passed Clark, then he's out.
Now, let me stop you here, if that's all right.
Okay.
And so when I was watching the play, and like I said, I was at work, and I had one eye on the computer screen and one eye on the TV screen, immediately, without knowing the exact details of the rule, my impression was once the ball made contact with the runner was going to be out regardless of whatever was going on. But
yep,
continue.
Basically, the rule is this. If the ball gets past a fielder, it could hit the runner. It's not interference on the part of the runner. However, the umpire can then rule if the ball hits him, whether he, by hitting him, it blocked another fielder from making a play. And this is what the umpire obviously ruled and what sent Nakahata flying out of the dugout. However, he did stop short of bumping into the umpire.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, basically, the thing is that it's kind of a strange play. Now, if the ball doesn't hit him.
If the ball doesn't hit Kinjo.
Doesn't hit Kinjo. Araki has already stopped to avoid running head on into Kinjo and knocking himself out of the game. Araki really didn't have a play when the ball hit him. He was 5 feet away, and the ball was moving into the outfield.
Yeah, I saw it as going into the outfield, so I was just
assuming.
But
Araki stopped to prevent the accident, a collision.
With the runner.
With the runner, and then the ball hits Kinjo. And the umpire said, well, the ball hitting Kinjo kept Araki from making the play. Anyway, it was a close call, but anyway, that's the rule. Nakahata came out and argued for a prolonged period of time without any violence.
No jesting.
No jesting, and he went back to the dugout. Now, here's the thing. Okay, I think the umpire got it wrong, but, you know, they do. And Takayuki Kajitani then comes up with a two-run double, sure, yeah. And he saves the umpire's blushes, as they say in soccer.
Well, you know, yeah, when I was watching the play, and like I said, because the ball hit the runner, I just assumed, because I wasn't able to listen to the umpire's spiel afterwards and their explanation as to why the runners had to all return to the bases, because normally when the ball hits a runner, the batter is credited with a hit, the runner is out, and all runners must return to the bases at which they started.
Right.
And in this case, you were correct. The ball was headed into right field. It looked like it was going to be a single. Maybe two runs were going to score. It turns out nobody gets to score. Everybody, there's an out. You're down to the last out in the inning. They scored it in TBS. I didn't check on Yahoo. They scored it a ground out to second, which doesn't make sense to me. It makes me think that the umpires ruled something else. But the thing is that I don't know how they would have been able to judge all those things going on at once, because there were so many moving parts to that play. And I didn't even realize when we talked about this before we started taping that Araki was that far away, because I thought the ball was going to get past him, but I didn't realize that he had stopped to avoid the runner, because he doesn't have to stop to avoid the runner. The runner has to avoid him.
Well, he stopped because he didn't want to end up in the hospital.
Well, Kinjo's not that big.
Not anymore. We were talking about how much weight he's lost the last couple of years, just as put that line. So, yes. But no, he stopped to avoid a collision. You know, self-preservation kicked in. And Kinjo stopped to prevent a collision. And then the ball hit him when he stopped to prevent, you know, when they're being so polite and civil. You know, weird things happen. But anyway, it was kind of an interesting play. It forced me to go to the rule book. And and the Bay Stars won the game. And the Bay Stars went on to sweep that series, unfortunately for the Dragons fans. But, good for the Bay Stars.
Hey, you know what? If I'm going to pick the Bay Stars to finish in the money, then I've got to put up with them beating my favorite team. But, you know, they're good. I think that I said it earlier. I think they're better than they were last year. They're at 500. I think 500 will get you in the playoffs in the Central League, because the games are going to be close. The teams are going to be close. Other than the Giants, I think everybody's still no. The Tigers just moved into double digits in victories, but everybody's pretty close. But I'm getting a look from the producer right now. I think we better go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from our buddy Mike in Tokorozawa and MP3. Awesome. Good to have you back, Mike. Here he is.
Hello, John and Jim. Greetings from Tokyo outside. Loving the show. You guys are doing a great job this year, as are the Lions. Boy, pitching and offense clicking so far, even without Okawari-kun in the lineup. You say Kikuchi is finally living up to his promise. He's looked great this year, topping out with his fastball at 152. I think he's a future ace. Yuji Kaneko, the unheralded rookie, also looking good. He's played shortstop, left field, right field, just about everywhere except pitcher, and he's hitting 365. Not bad, through 15 games. Now, obviously, I don't, you know, expect him to continue hitting the cover off the ball like that, although he has a homer and two triples. But, you know, this raises an interesting question for me. Has a rookie ever won a batting title in Japan? Thanks a lot, guys. Love the show.
All right. Well, good question. Good question. Jim, I'll let you handle this one because I know you did some research.
Well, the research was fairly easy. The question is a simple one. If we just leave it at the basic questions, have any rookies won the batting title? And the answer is yes. The most famous was Shigeo Nagashima in 1958. The most recent was Norichika Aoki in 2005 when he was in his second year pro. And before that, the aforementioned
ball kicker.
hit him in the thigh, I think, at Tatsuhiko Kinjo, was the Central League batting champion. And both of these guys were Rookie of the Year. That was in 2000. So
Kinjo of the Yokohama Bay Stars. So,
Good
question. Good question. So do I think Kaneko has a chance to do that? I need to see more. I just need to see more. That's all I'm going to say. Everybody, you know, he's a switch hitter, which gives him an advantage because he can bat from the left side sometimes and really, really use that speed to get a lot of infield hits or at least put a lot of pressure on infielders. So I think he's going to do well in that respect, but I just need to see more.
Well, you know, he hasn't done it yet. And I don't want to sound like John and say that he can't do it because he hasn't done it yet. But
I didn't say that yet. I said I want to see more.
No, you say that about a lot of people who are untried. Oh, he hasn't done it before. It's like having our buddy Jim Nishi back.
I said unproven.
I know. But but I've heard it enough.
I didn't say can't do it because he hasn't done it. Oh, okay. All right. All right.
If we remember Ryota Arai, we had this discussion last year. I don't want him to clean up spot because he hasn't ever done it before. do I agree with you? Yeah, I think it's a long shot to think that he can come up straight out of the chute and do this as a rookie. Could he do it in the future? Could he be a batting champ? Sure, why not? I mean, there's no reason to think he can't be. A lot of things can change between now and then. He is thin, but he's athletic. So, okay. Yeah, give him some credit for that.
All right. Next question is from Brian in California, and he said, we failed to answer one of his questions when we responded to some that he sent in earlier before, so we apologize for that. He said in parentheses, maybe the producer forgot.
Who's this producer?
I don't know, man. All right, so his question is, why do teams have random single games scheduled at the end of seasons? For example, in late September and early October, the Sabre Lions play Saturday at the Hawks, Sunday home to the Marines, Tuesday at the Marines, Wednesday home to the Hawks, etc. What's going on here? Why couldn't they fit these games into regular 3 or 4 game series during the summer?
Well, that's a tricky question because there's two answers. One is, if you look at last season's schedule and how it played out, these are likely makeup games because they don't do a very good job in Japan of making up games during the season.
Because they won't play doubleheaders.
And Japan's, and another issue which goes along with that is that Japan's infrastructure in terms of transportation scheduling makes it very hard because for a team to stay an extra day on a random occurrence, on a random event, you know, on 12 hours notice is almost impossible. They have to have hotel rooms for 70 or 80 people. They've got to make transportation and all kinds of, you know, not only tickets, but also baggage and all sorts of heavy things need to be moved around. It's a massive thing where everything in Japan is scheduled. I mean, you see 4-year-olds walking around with date books, you know, to schedule things.
I'll try to fit you in, teacher.
No, it's like, can we go out and can Jimmy come out and play ball? Let's see. He can on the third Tuesday of next month. Okay. So anyway, So that's a reason for that. The Pacific League does a better job of scheduling makeup games during the season, but what they do is they pre-schedule them so that there will be scheduled makeup games whenever they can fit them in on the schedule. And if they happen to fit, if those rainouts between those two teams happen before that, they'll add them. I know there is a makeup game, I think, in June of a game, and that was rained out in April between the Marines and the Eagles. So
right. So, Brian, the short answer is because it's a mess. You know, they're not very good at scheduling things. It's very difficult.
It's difficult. Yeah. Those two things, yeah.
All right. So his other question is, are you and or Jim coming to Southern California for the Giants/Tigers games next spring? I'm looking forward to seeing some MPB games in person and hopefully meeting you guys. And my answer is, for me, probably not, because I don't even get to travel down to Fukuoka for the first round of the WBC. So why would they send me abroad?
Well, and my answer is probably not as well. I would hope. It all depends on Kyoto News' desire to cover that event. If they have no interest or I cannot get enough interest in that, then the answer is no. And the other story is they may not actually have those games if they don't sell enough tickets in advance.
Right. Those games are supposedly going to be played in the 2014 season, some exhibition games in Arizona in March, then Dodger Stadium for a game, and then Angel Stadium or the Big A or whatever they're calling it now, the place with the rocks out there in the outfield and left center. Hopefully I'll get to go, but we'll go to the next question. Thanks a lot, Brian. Now for a question for Kevin in Tokyo. He says, my question is about the official Oendan, or I don't even know what to say about these things in English. Is it cheering section? Is that how you translate it?
I would call them cheering groups.
Cheering groups.
Because they're, from the standpoint of the batter and the people in the infield, they look like one group. But in fact, they are comprised of, it's a confederation of cheering organizations that support each team.
Okay. So is the official Oendan at the games, are they employees of the teams? And he puts in parentheses, as I suspect. And the answer to that, I did some research. I went around to some of the reporters when I was out this past week. And one of these grizzled reporters, these old guys who's always at the games I always see, and I actually don't even know his name, but I see him all the time, and I just struck up a conversation with him, and we started talking. And he gave me some insight, and he said as far as he knew, these groups, and from team to team, the relationship with these groups are different. Some of them give some of these people more leeway and some of them don't, but officially they are not part of the team.
Right.
And they're not paid. They don't get paid. Most of the people who do it just for the pure love of the game. And it's just like joining a group and being a massive baseball junkie in a different kind of way. They're very hardcore fans. Some of whom own their own businesses, so they have the time to go to the games every night. But it's not always the same people that you see. You might have bumped into a few people here and there at the same venue, but they're not always at the same game, or not at every game. So a lot of them they're just hardcore people. Now, you might recall in 2009, this is an example of them not being part of the team. In 2009, with Bobby Valentine, when he was getting basically forced out with the Chivalote Marines, at one point when the fans started bringing in signs that that were very, the phrase that this reporter used with me was detrimental to the team, that they were banned from the ballpark and they weren't allowed to come in. And some of those people were infuriated to the point where they almost took it to court. So, I mean, it was a real big deal. So in summation, no, they're not connected with the teams officially, but each team has its own relationship with these groups and affords them some luxuries that other teams don't. But they always keep a little bit of distance between themselves and these groups.
Right. Now, these people all be members of the fan club, and so they get a large number of, they get discount tickets, and they do have special privileges, and the privileges go to, are treated differently. The Tigers fan clubs have a lot of pull, and Deanna Rubin, who is our, I guess, the woman who knows more about fan clubs in Japan than any other foreign a non-Japanese person, told me that at Jingu Stadium, the Swallows Owen Don get into the park, are let into the park before the Swallows fans are. Well, that may be out of a desire to curb trouble. The Tigers fans have a reputation which is partially deserved for being trouble. When they lost their interleague series with the Marines in 2005, a number of unhappy Tigers fans uprooted trees around Chiba Marine Stadium.
Nice. It's these trees. He hates these trees. Here I go dating myself again.
Well, as long as you don't stand yourself up, you're fine.
All right. Well, yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for the questions, everyone. They were awesome.
Indeed.
Yeah. Please send more. You know where to send them. It's yakyujohn@gmail.com, or leave us a note on the Facebook page as usual. And, of course, I was really busy this past week and I wasn't on it very much, but I check it daily.
Yep.
All right. Good job, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Good job. Enjoyed that one. Looking forward to this weekend. I'm not going to get to any games and I will be on a kind of a mini vacation this weekend, but I will be catching up with you and staying in touch from beautiful Hikone in Shiga Prefecture.
All right, buddy. Well, enjoy your vacation while we enjoy our baseball. Bye-bye.